This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 145. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This long-awaited episode is an interview with Clint Richardson, Part 4, titled The Kaffir, From Ron Paul to Stockton to the Vatican to the California Debt, and is being released on Saturday, July 14, 2012. My interview with Clint was recorded on Friday, the 13th of July, 2012. A protege of Walter Burian, Clint Richardson is back for his fourth installment on the CAFR, or Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Clint has been on previously to discuss his videos, The Corporation Nation, Lethal Injection, and his investigation of my local school district, CAFR School, REM of the World Unified School District Exposé. Clint has what I consider the most important information out there today on our economy and how it actually functions. A former Hollywood sound designer and musician, a crisis of consciousness led him to begin researching, writing, and eventually producing primary research documentaries exposing the very research that Hollywood is designed to hide from the masses. Now unable to work in his industry of study, for his Hollywood betrayal, Clint applies his professional sound talent and newly learned video skills, as well as a devotion to first-hand primary research and writing, to contribute to the waking up of the population at large. His credo? Expose them until they dispose of him. Clint's documentaries include The Corporation Nation, The Corporation Nation 2, The Great Pension Fund Hoax, Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccines, and the CAFR School series, and then also up on the website to this episode will be links to Clint's articles and blogs and things like that, and he's got a couple of new articles out, one revealing that the Vatican is indeed not broke, and another revealing how corporations are funded by taxpayers, and he's also put out several other new articles that will be linked in the links for the notes on this episode. And upcoming shows, Joe Atwill is back, and he is going to be Gnostic Media's first video presentation, and also Peter Gorman regarding his book on ayahuasca, and I'm really sorry for putting that off so long, and also Lisa Graves to discuss ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And donations. This episode is dedicated to Casey Lewis, who donated three times, and many of these people donated two or three times, and the names that you are hearing during this episode are really the people who keep everything running here at Gnostic Media. So again, Casey Lewis, who donated three times, Michael, Arthur, who donated twice, Scott, who donated twice, Roman, Kim, who donated twice, Jeremy, who donated twice, Bew, who donated twice, John, Evo, who donated twice, Angela, and I think Angela donated twice, and Mike, Aaron, Ryan donated twice, Samuel donated twice, John number two, also donated twice, Tino donated twice, Tad twice, David twice, Joseph, Janet donated twice, Max donated twice, Paul donated twice, John 3, Marina, Christopher donated twice, Stephen, Randy, who donated twice, Larry, who donated twice, Tony donated twice, and also Hank from Europe, and Teresa, and Carlos, who donated twice, and Michael, and Walter, Jeremy, Viero, Eric, Yariv, CF, Afua, Claire, Steve L., and Lenny H. And of course, this episode is dedicated to all of you. Thank you so much for making this episode happen, and some of those donated equipment as well as money. And of course, again, thank you all so much for making this episode happen. And the widget for the video and book project, The Secret History of Magic Mushrooms, is going slow, and I'll probably take it down this week from the Gnostic Media website. The widget has brought in about $4,500 towards the project, which we've used for new equipment and expanding what we're capable of doing here. And as we raise more funds, we'll be able to apply the rest of that money towards the book and DVD project. But right now, we do have the equipment that we need necessary to make that project happen as soon as we get the funds to actually get on the road and get the filming and things going for that. And as I've mentioned before, those who've donated towards the new book and DVD project, they will be listed on the site for that and in the project separate from the Gnostic Media Podcast. So I appreciate your patience. And it's been a long haul trying to raise the funds for that. And we do our best to provide just about everything here for free. So please help with donations and help us get these projects and things done. This show is run on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. By donating or ordering one of the books or DVDs or the She Who Remembers audio archives, a t-shirt, or getting a membership to the website to download the older podcasts, you help to continue this unprogramming. And of course, we greatly appreciate your support. And the first 3 years of the Gnostic Media Podcast are also up there for you to order so that you don't have to sit there and download 220 hours worth of audio. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself or Gnostic Media. You can go to the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can reach me through the contact form on the website or directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Please also check out the Tragedy and Hope and Peace Revolution podcast, the School Sucks podcast, James Corbett's Corbett Report, and James Evan Pilato's Media Monarchy. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview number 4 with Clint Richardson. Welcome to the machine. Enjoy. Ready to get going, Clint?
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to the Gnostic Media Podcast for your, what is this, your fourth appearance?
I believe it is.
And I've been on your show once or twice when you were running Truot's radio show. And it's good to have you back. And boy, you've been doing a serious amount of writing over the last couple of months since we spoke. And you've put out some work on Ron Paul, on the Vatican, on the Electoral College, on, well, what are you working on now as well?
Right now I'm actually working on the Stockton Kaffir, Stockton, California, which is, you know, as I've been warning people.
I just drove through Stockton 2 or 3 days ago.
Yeah, well, these cities now, cities, counties, are starting to declare bankruptcy, as has been kind of the plan all along, and you know, it's a very devious thing, because again, you know, we're talking about declaring bankruptcy because our checking account balance is in the negative while our savings account balance is, you know, in the millions, billions, or trillions, and so, and people are falling for it, and you know, what else can I do except expose it and try to get people to actually understand how this Kaffir thing works. And so I'm writing an educational walkthrough, a Kaffir school, if you will, about the Stockton Kaffir, and it's basically false flag bankruptcy. It's not true, and they're actually 5 months or 6 months late on actually issuing their Kaffir for their comprehensive annual financial report, the financial statements for 2011. And so they're actually declaring bankruptcy without even having their financial statements available, which is malfeasance. It's actually against their own law. So,
wow. So now, you know, and you've been able to bring some serious attention to this stuff. And although I didn't hear you personally on Alex Jones, I did hear Alex Jones talking about it. And of course, it's made the Huffington Post recently. And, lots of bloggers are starting to talk about the Kaffir issue.
It's exciting. I'm getting people contacting me from all over the world, but specifically in the United States that are literally wanting to figure this thing out, and that is very rewarding, because you know it's a very thankless thing to try to do this research and write it, and so it's very exciting to have people actually now starting to literally wake up, because there's various levels of what we refer to as being awake, and for the most part nobody is. And you know, I think that you can agree that there are certain aspects out there, certain knowledge, certain Gnostic things that need to be known before you can truly even be close to being awake. And one of those is the financial accounting structure of government. That is one of the best kept secrets. And of course, we're talking about that comprehensive annual financial report now.
And let me just interject real quick, Clint. And what does that rest upon but the false belief and appeal to authority that Larkin Rose lays out so well?
Well, absolutely. The whole cover-up, if you will, of the CAFR, of these financial statements, is done through the media. It is done through fallacies, every fallacy you can think of, really, when it comes to how government hides and invests the taxpayer money. And you know, even that is a fallacy, because it's not taxpayer money. We're talking about a corporation here. It is the corporation's money. It is invested in what is called non-governmental funds. It is non-taxpayer funds. So, I mean, the reason that I just released a little thing on the Vatican, because the Vatican came out and said, hey, we have a $16 million budget deficit this year. Now, the Vatican is the perfect example of the lying by omission, the lies that a government will tell. And keep in mind that the Vatican is a city state. It is a corporation. It is a country in and of itself. It is not part of
Italy.
Just like the city of London is the crown temple. It is not part of England. It is its own country, just as the United States, the federal corporation, is its own foreign corporation. It is not one of the 50 United States. It is a completely separate entity. So the Vatican is the perfect example to compare what is happening here. So the Vatican just said, hey, we're $16 million in debt. We have a deficit of $16 million. Now, keep in mind, anybody that knows anything about the Vatican knows that underneath that big structure, that big kingdom, is the Vatican vaults. And in those vaults is every priceless artifact that has ever been taken by the church, they call themselves a church.
Sure.
And we're talking about
every you know, famous piece of art that was confiscated, and gold and you name it, they've got everything in there, and they could probably sell one of those items and pay off that debt. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. We're talking about priceless artifacts. Priceless, meaning that no amount of money in the world could possibly pay for that artifact. And yet here's an organization, a corporation, stating that it is broke. And at the same time, and this is very important, the Vatican has, just like our government, the Vatican has independent agencies and independent enterprise operations. So its museums, where millions and millions of people across the world come to visit the Vatican museums, they're reporting an actual increase in assets of more of like $24 million. And so what we have
they just don't report their holdings and then pretend like they're not in profits.
Yeah, so we're talking about a government, just like our government. The Vatican is the government of Vatican City. We're talking about a government reporting to the people basically its checking account and ignoring everything else, all of its investments and its savings account. So the $26 million that got brought in, or $24 million that got brought in by one of its for-profit corporations, one of its enterprise operations, is not being reported because it's not part of the actual Vatican's budget plan, you see. So this is the absolute perfect example of how government, any government, hides the wealth from the people. if that wealth was taken into consideration, the Vatican, by far, without even a comprehension of how wealthy it actually is, would be the wealthiest corporation on the face of the planet. It would never be in debt because it owns half the planet. I mean, it's just, you know, these things, this is the trick. This is open secret of government, and that is shown. It even lists in the article, it lists that the difference between the budget and the financial statements, the comprehensive annual financial report. Yes, the Vatican also creates a comprehensive annual financial report, just like every other government out there. So it's just the perfect example, and that was my latest little blurb I put up on my blog. I think if people read that, they'll really get a good grasp on what's happening. we need to talk, though. Before we go any further, we need to talk. I want to say first off and foremost that I am in a mode of humility. I'm in a mode of being embarrassed because, you know, here I am running for a write-in candidate for president. And most people probably think that's a joke. Most people probably think, oh, he'll never win. And that's exactly what I wanted people to understand, is that I can't win. But what I didn't know when I started this whole thing is that literally, here I am asking people to vote for me, and literally, they can't vote for me. I took a look about 3 weeks ago at the Electoral College of the United States, as written in the Constitution and amended by the Constitution, Amendment 12, Amendment 17, and a couple others, and put the pieces together, and I realized that I had no idea how our presidential elections actually work. And what I found, and again, I'm embarrassed by this, and anybody listening to this who thinks that they vote or have any say in who the president of the United States is going to be, they are absolutely dead wrong. And again, I'm saying this in complete humility and embarrassment. I did not know that this was the case. The Electoral College is 538 people who elect the President of the United States. When we're talking about the popular vote, where 100 million Americans get all patriotic and shit and go out and vote, their votes do not count. Their votes do not count. The popular vote has nothing to do with the election of the president. And so we have a situation where literally tens of millions of people in the United States actually think that they elected a black man to the presidency. People actually think.
Are you saying that it's not their fault?
Well, what can I say? I didn't know about this. I don't think you knew about this.
Well, I had heard about the Electoral College issue before, and I had, you know, you can definitely see it when you go to countries like Peru, where they have a popular democracy, where they're much more, they just go out and strike and protest and force the government to their will. But the government does certainly fight back and kill a lot of people as well. But, I was aware of the Electoral College issue, but I hadn't heard it laid out in as great a detail as you did.
Yeah, and I highly recommend people, again, read this this tome of research. It was actually going to be a movie script, and it turned out that I thought this was so important, because we're about to go to an election, the four-year election of president, and everybody that's going to go vote is doing so completely. It's your vote is completely irrelevant. But, it has nothing.
And all you're really doing by going and voting, therefore, is then giving the criminals consent to do whatever they want to do. Whereas if you didn't go and vote, then they couldn't act under consent either.
Yes and no. I mean, that's another thing that I kind of figured out, is that because we are all – because the United States was forced back together after the Civil War under duress, because Congress was not Congress, because 10, 11 states were not participating in Congress anymore. We have been in a state of martial law or military rule since the Civil War, and that has never been undeclared. I've got the executive orders from Lincoln and from, who was it after that, Johnson, that declare martial law, but there's been no treaty of peace to take us out of martial law. And so the fact that the military is actually has bases in every country or every state, that alone is martial law. People
so,
think
so
of that.
They're actually, so we never considered before that the military bases are actually occupying bases.
You never thought of that. No, just like Germany. Germany has been occupied by America.
I've been to Frankfurt and I've seen all the troops everywhere, and it never occurred to me that, Norton Air Force Base that was right at the bottom of the mountain is now closed, and then March Air Force Base, which was a huge center, is not far from here and still somewhat operable, and then we've got the huge Miramar Marine Air Station down in San Diego. So we've got a number of major occupying stations here in California.
Absolutely. We have one of the largest weapons depot just about an hour's drive, a stone's throw from me. We also have the NSA center that's going in, that's just in my backyard. I can see it from the mountain that I live on. It's really scary. This thing is going to be this huge spy center that's going to be spying on all of us. It's going to have a drone landing pad, basically an airport for drones. I mean, we are in such bad shape. And yes, this is because we are under military rule. Martial law, when the marshals of law are called, that is just basically the, you might call it the violent or obvious phase of military rule. Okay, one needs to study the Lieber Code, another, which is Title 50 of the U.S. Code. Type in the Lieber Code. Find out about the Lieber Code, because that is the origins of martial law, basically, in this country. It is,
and that's a very interesting title, because the word Lieber is Latin for book and for free, where we get the word liberty.
Well, it's also the basis of martial law in this country.
Very interesting.
So when I looked into this and I started seeing who the actual electors were, so what happens is, we're all funneled as voters every year. When we go vote for president, we're all funneled into these 100% private associations, non-governmental, not political, just private associations, and those are called the Democratic and Republican parties. And as long as our votes as the people are being delegated as faithful voters to the party, as long as we never see outside of the two-party system, we've heard that before, of course. I don't know who coined that two-party, phrase, but as long as we are putting our votes into these political parties, and they have such power over the election process, the way it works is that each congressman, each national senator and House member, there's 438 congressmen and 100 senators, and each of those guys, according to the Constitution, gets a electoral vote. Those votes are then delegated to, because they can't actually use the vote because they're in the trust of the United States, the corporation, those must be delegated to the people. Well, we find out when we actually look at the list of who elected Obama in 2008 that the people who are voted on by the political parties to be the electors are what are called faithful. There's faithful and faithless electors. So in other words, the Democratic and Republican parties nominate who is going to be the elector for each state. For instance, Arizona, I believe, has about 10 electoral college votes. Those are almost hands down always a Democrat or a Republican. They call them either faithful or faithless. A faithful elector will always vote in the party. A faithless is dangerous, and so they don't usually put those people up there. Someone who might have a little free thought and actually want to vote across party lines or vote for a third-party candidate. Okay, so these people are free to vote for anyone they want. They could vote for me, although they won't, because I don't have $1 trillion to lobby them with. Okay, so let's talk about who these electors actually were. These are the people, some of the people, who actually elected Obama. And keep in mind, and this is something I'm still need to research, I was talking to a wonderful, wonderful lady named April Rain in Pennsylvania the other day, and she was telling me that her research found that some of the electors that elected President Obama were actually dead for over 20 years. Now, I have to research that, so don't quote me on that, but that's my next little project that I have to look at. But let's talk about some of the people who were alive that actually voted for Obama. Remember, your vote does not count. The only vote that counts is the electoral votes, the electoral college, the electors. Well, these are the electors. Okay, first one I'm going to tell you about is a gentleman named Edward E. Ted Kaufman. Okay, he's a Delaware United States Senator from 2009 to 2010. Since 2010, he's chaired the Congressional Oversight Panel, and he is the member of the Democratic Party, who was appointed to the Senate to fill the term of longtime Senator Joe Biden, who resigned to become Vice President of the United States in 2009. Prior to becoming U.S. Senator, Kaufman, Mr. Ted here, had been an advisor to Biden for much of his political career. So let's think about this for a moment. Do you see a conflict of interest? Do you see a quote-unquote conspiracy here, a plan between two or more people? I think you do, because here's the guy who voted for president and vice president, so Obama and Biden. And he then filled Joe Biden's – he got a promotion to fill, as an appointment, Joe Biden's seat in the Senate. Okay? This is one of the 538 people who elected these two guys into office. Doesn't matter if it's a Republican or Democrat. It only matters that it's either a Democrat or Republican, excuse me. All right. Let's talk about some others. How about here's a guy named Alan Katz. Okay, Alan Katz is a absolutely a Jew, writer, producer, actor, director. No political career whatsoever. He wrote for Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and MASH. The Cher Show, Rhoda, Roseanne, on and on and on. He is one of the electors of President of the United States. All right.
Wow.
How about, here's my favorite. My favorite is a gentleman named James Philip Hoffa. James just happens to be the only son of Jimmy Hoffa. Okay, James is a Bard attorney, and he's the labor leader, the general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. This is one of the people who elected the president of the United States in 2008. Also, his good friend, Ronald Gitelfinger, president of the United Auto Workers Union from 2002 to 2010. Remember, this was 2008. So, but you've got governors. You've got Governor Andrew Mark Cuomo, who's the son of Mario Cuomo. You've got Thomas DiNapoli. He's the 54th comptroller of New York. You've got my worst enemy in Utah, which is Mark Shurtleff. He is our attorney general. Okay? He is one of the most corrupt people I know, and if you read his blog, you'll see that he's a lover of Israel. So, you know, we could go down the list. We could see all these people. All of them are state, not national, but state, either congressmen or senators, governors. You name it, they're in there. Attorney generals, whatever. Also, other attorneys. Most of them are a lot of them are barred. So, I just want people to know. Now, I had a guy tell me on one of the other shows I did. He said, "You know, I gave $5,000 to Ron Paul, to one of his super PACs or whatever they're calling them nowadays." And he said, "I am actually submitting a lawsuit to get that money back." and I'm going to give it to you. And I told him, look, you know, there was a time when I would have said, hey, I'll take that money because it'll fund some of the things I'll do. And if that's why you want to give it to me, great. But do not give it to me because you want me to be president, because I cannot be president unless you're going to give me billions and billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars, so that I can actually lobby the electors, the 500 or, you know, I guess in this case it would have to be 250 or so electors, so that I get the majority vote of the people who actually elect the president. And that's where we're at. That's where we're at, people. If you go vote this year after hearing this, and you understand that the popular vote has nothing to do with voting or electing the president, then I'm sorry, but what can I say? You're a fool.
Why don't we go into some of the code, Clint, that covers this issue?
The U.S. code or the...
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Oh, where to begin? when it comes to the most important stuff, we have to cover the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment, basically all states after the Civil War, after martial law sort of calmed down, all of the states were actually forced to become or to ratify the 14th Amendment. So in the 14th Amendment, it's very important to not understate the fact that we all became corporations. We all became persons. We also became enemies of the state after Roosevelt declared this and changed the Act of 1933. So basically, we are all, as persons of the United States, we are all enemies of the state, and we are all no longer people, because we've given up our residence in our respective states, and we have become residents of the federal government, which is Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. So when you go and you, just to make you understand how that works, when you go and you vote for president, all of your votes, all 100 million votes from the people, basically get counted in Washington, D.C., because the first thing that you see when you fill out your ballot for president of the United States is this question, which is, are you a United States citizen? And we all say, well, sure, I'm all proud of that, and I'm going to check yes. Well, you've just entered into the jurisdiction of the United States, because you are a citizen, you are a person, a 14th Amendment person of the United States. Therefore, your vote is only going towards the vote for the federal government. The federal government is Washington, D.C. So you understand that, you understand why the people don't have a vote for president, because we're not voting in our state. We are voting in Washington, D.C. It's very important to grasp. One of the other things about a lot of these, what we call Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, 15th, and then the 16th and 17th Amendments, there's a little section in those amendments that it's pretty amazing, really, because there's a big movement out there that says the 10th Amendment is what really protects the people. It says that, anything... Any rights that are not granted by the Constitution to Congress are left to the states. Yeah, yeah. So if you go and you read the 14th, the 13th, all of these new amendments that they've been putting out, we have a little problem here, because Section 2 of, say, the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment says the following. It says, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Well, so what does that mean? If you put that into an amendment, what does that mean? Okay, what that is a loophole, you see, a loophole that completely destroys the 10th Amendment. Is gone. The 10th Amendment is useless if it is amended like this, so that Congress can just legislate. In other words, it can create a bill to change the 13th Amendment. It can create a bill to enforce and to change by appropriate legislation, any amendment in the Constitution. It no longer needs to create an amendment to change the Constitution. And that, if you understand that, you understand why everything is basically unconstitutional when comparing it to the original organic Constitution. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the original organic Constitution was a good thing. Okay, I'm kind of a Constitution basher, but the word organic is really a legal term that means original. And so we don't have the original Constitution. Once you amend something, it is no longer a foundation. The foundation has been changed, and it is a new Constitution. So every amendment that is created basically creates a new Constitution. So anybody that says anything in this country is unconstitutional needs to understand that Congress has granted itself constitutionally through the amendment process, has granted itself all of the powers necessary to completely nullify the 10th Amendment and anything else that you might say is unconstitutional. Okay, so in other words, everything is constitutional. Whenever the Supreme Court's going to rule on something that is quote-unquote constitutional, guess what? It's not looking at the original Constitution, because that has changed. It's been amended away. So everything at this point is constitutional because Congress has the power to delegate any authority it wants to. Congress created most of the executive departments and said, well, the president is in charge of these departments. We're going to put the whole justice system into the executive branch. We're going to take away all the powers of the judicial and put them into the executive. We're going to create the Justice Department. So at this point, no case will ever be heard by the Supreme Court unless the judicial branch, which is the executive branch, the Justice Department, which is the executive branch, says so, because the Solicitor General, the Attorney General, basically all law is now conducted out of the Department of Justice. The only thing left in the judicial is the Supreme Court. To even get a case into the Supreme Court, the Bar Association has to approve it. So basically everything in government has been transferred, delegated, and given over to private associations, including the Electoral College, the vote of those electors. So you've got Government Accounting Standards Board, you've got Federal Accounting Standards Board, you've got Generally Accepted Accounting P. What does the P stand for? GAAP. You've got so many Government Financial Officers Association. You go to your local government office, your local city hall, and you ask for the financial officers. Go ask them, are you a member of GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association? They're going to say yes, chances are. And you find out that this is where all of the uniformity, all of the codes that we are forced to follow, that's where they're all coming from. All of these things, all the Agenda 21, for instance, is all coming from these types of organizations, these non-governmental private associations, including the Democratic and Republican Party, the Bar Association. All of these are private associations that have been delegated all of this authority. And that's basically where we're at. The codes that you're referring to are all created essentially by these private associations. Another one that I think is really important that we could do a whole show on is ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. We are talking about, when we're talking about ALEC, we are talking about the ultimate in lobbying organizations, because ALEC.
Well, give us all the grammar on ALEC. Who, what, where, when?
ALEC was created in the 70s by the Koch brothers. It was a conglomeration of different corporations. It's basically a front for the Koch brothers. Koch is a big holding company, basically, a lot of different corporations. But you had Coca-Cola, you had all these big major power players out there, which were and still are literally writing the legislation. So let's put it this way. when you see things like the healthcare bill, when you see things like Obama's latest preparedness thing, when you see all of these bills going into Congress, and then you see that Congress hasn't read the bills, you got to understand that Congress is just there really to push the button that says yes or no. So what's happening here is that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, it is something that members join. So it's a bunch of corporations, like 300 different corporations, and then most of our local and federal legislators, including Congress, the Senate, most of these organizations. So they're basically wined and dined by these major corporations who are writing the legislation. The congressmen and the senators, they take that legislation back to Washington with them or to their local venue. A lot of it Agenda 21, most of it focusing on the privatization of government, which started with Reagan and who was the prime minister, the Reagan's Margaret, second wife.
Margaret Thatcher?
Yes, yes. Both of those people were huge in the privatization of government. I cover privatization in the Corporation Nation. So, but ALEC is basically ghostwriting the legislation. That's the best way of putting it. And that legislation is then being put on the Senate floor, the Congress, or the House floor, and it is being voted. There's probably, I think the average is about 1,000 different ALEC bills that get put yep. into Congress, and about 200 of them are actually passed every year.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because as I was investigating Gordon Wasson's background, I discovered that he was one of the co-authors of the original Stock Exchange Act. And, of course, Wasson was the vice president of propaganda and public relations for J.P. Morgan Bank.
Oh, the connections. I mean, yeah, you could go all day and pull up all these connections. It's incredible. I recommend to everybody that wants to know where this legislation comes from, wants to know why your congressmen and your senators do not read these bills, why the president signs them, you must learn about ALEC. Okay, if you go to it's ALEC, so go to alecexposed.com, I believe, and just poke around in the site. You're going to find some really amazing stuff, some really amazing things that you never could have imagined. One of the most beautiful ones I found is that ALEC made a public statement. They said, illegal immigration is a emerging market in the United States. Keep in mind that ALEC is one of the big promoters of private prisons, because we're talking about massive profits here, not only in government contracts, but in slave labor, right? Because these people are getting paid 40 cents an hour to put products together. And if you want to see what these prisoners are making, you can go to the various websites that sell the products that prisoners make. We're all worried about our products being made in China, and yet we have a 3 million or a 1 million man labor force in prison, the slave labor. Okay, and that goes back to the 13th Amendment, where slavery or involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, where the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to its jurisdiction. In other words, slavery and involuntary servitude is okay as a punishment for crime. That's what it says. That is what the 13th Amendment says. Everybody says, oh, it got rid of slavery. What it really did was to make all people equal slaves. It didn't make black people into free men. It made everyone else into slaves if they're convicted of a crime, basically. So we have to read these things, and we have to read them without rose-colored glasses. We're getting all over the place, and I apologize for that, because I've got so much information. What's amazing about this is, just from a year ago when we've been doing these interviews, how much we learn in that amount of time.
Sure.
And how humbling it is, again, to find out that you didn't even know this whole time. that how the dang president was actually elected, and here you are trying to run for president. Do you know how humbling that is? I mean, it lets you know that no matter how much knowledge you attain, you are so far off from understanding everything, and that you never will, and you have to keep going. If you want to understand, you have to keep going. You have to discover your faults. You have to discover your arrogance, and you have to figure out that under no circumstances can you ever stop learning, and under no circumstances can you ever put your faith in men. Put your faith in a man named Ron Paul, as if he is has the power to save.
Let's get into Ron Paul, because since you were on last, and we exposed a lot of his stuff before, but a couple of weeks ago he pitched everything to Mitt Romney and was out of there. So what now?
Well, you know, I did a real in-depth article called, again, I'm referring to my blog, which is realityblogger.wordpress.com. It's called The Incontrovertible Conundrum of Dr. Ron Paul. I highly recommend everybody read this thing because it really, really, really covers what we talked about quite a while ago, which was the audit the Fed bill and what a fraud that bill actually is, that it will do nothing, absolutely nothing, whatsoever to create a new audit of the Federal Reserve. Okay, this is perhaps the most deceitful thing I've ever actually read, because I actually went in and I covered every single thing that was said in this thing. Before, I just took a cursory look and I said, well, this won't do anything. It doesn't really create anything. It doesn't do anything. Now I've gone in and I've taken every single aspect of this audit the Fed bill, and I've broken it down into as basic of terms as possible. And what I've found with this audit the Fed bill is, if it's possible, it actually makes the auditing process worse. First of all, the audit is conducted every year, as we've talked about before, which is the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. That is the financial audit of the Federal Reserve. It is also the financial audit of every government and private corporation out there. Okay, this is undisputable. I bet my life and that of my mother's that this is the case. You can see it for yourself. There is no doubt whatsoever that that is the audit of the Federal Reserve. Now, why is that important? That is important because let's just say I'm Ron Paul, or I'm in Ron Paul's position, and I want a complete audit. As I keep telling people, I want a complete audit of the Federal Reserve. Okay, it would make sense to me, if that was my goal, that I would create a bill that completely bypassed what was already in the codes and statutes. In other words, I would create a bill that said, irregardless of any current law, I want an audit complete all the way since its inception in the 1910s. I want a complete and thorough audit of the Federal Reserve with nothing whatsoever to block any information. And if any information is not included in that audit, you're going to jail for 40 years on an indictment. You're going to San Quentin. You're going to get what you deserve on the backside. So that would be the logical thing. If I was to go and I was going to tell, you know, millions of people, millions of fans, I don't call them followers or supporters. I call them fans, because Paul has been propped up like a rock star, and it's very unwarranted in my opinion. I would simply do what I just said. I would create a bill that completely bypassed all current law, and I would say, okay, that's it. Let's vote on this. But what Ron Paul has done is he has created a bill that changes one small section of U.S. code, one tiny little section. There is absolutely nothing that this bill will do except to change one aspect of U.S. code. Do you know how much U.S. code, how many things, you know, are part of the auditing process? I mean, We are talking about this is so fraudulent that I can't even put it into words. It's amazing that we have all fallen for this and not actually read what he's saying. First of all, Ron Paul has done absolutely nothing in Congress. I got to get this out too. Ron Paul has done not done one thing as a congressman. Okay, he has not done one thing. He has not passed as a sponsor one bill in Congress except one bill. One little bill that actually sent some federal money over to Galveston for a historical landmark. That's it. One bill got passed. Ron Paul has done absolutely nothing in it, and I'm sure that most people that are fans are going to say, well, he tried. He always voted no against all these bad bills, and he did. You know, he's always doing these patriotic speeches. Isn't that enough? Well, no, it's not. It's nothing. It means absolutely nothing. It would be like saying that because Alex Jones has covered most of the documents in government, that we're all safe now, that all of these things are good because Alex Jones talked about them. No. Actions, not words, are what counts when we look at the record. So we got 24 years of Ron Paul, not one bill passed on the national level. Okay? That is our hero. Okay? Now, for those people who are fans and say, well, wait a minute, Ron Paul, he's such a good guy. Wait a minute. But actually what he's been doing this whole time is what I referred to as the bait and switch. Okay? Here's what he's been doing. And I didn't know this until just recently. A massive bill appears in Congress. Ron Paul goes out and rallies against the bill. He says, no, we can't have this. No to FEMA. No to this. No to that. Well, what does he do? Publicly, that's what he's saying. But in Congress, what he's doing, he's putting what are called earmarks into these bills. Now, the Republican Party actually has a moratorium on earmarks. It says, no, we can't do this anymore. We have to pretend like we're good people and we can't put earmarks in them. So Ron Paul is actually putting millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of earmarks into the bills that he's voting no against. Now, he knows absolutely that those bills are probably going to get passed. Okay. But he's voting no against bills knowing that they will pass, and then benefiting from all of the earmarks that he places into those bills, and then votes no against the bill. Now, is that someone that we should be taking as a hero? I mean, you tell me. That to me is the ultimate of in deceit. That to me is criminal, if you ask me, especially when the party that you represent tells you not to do it. It makes it sound like the Republican Party is actually honest, which, of course, it's not. But you see what I'm saying? It's crazy. And again, the fans come out of the woodwork and they defend this guy somehow. Well, that's the only way that you'll ever be able to function in government. Well, let me tell you something. You either have morals and values and standards and practices that you follow, or you don't. That's the bottom line, and to me, this is a deal breaker. Any faith, any promise that I held in Ron Paul is completely gone at this point, now that I've read this. So as far as the audit the Fed bill, we're talking that the audit the Fed bill does not affect the comprehensive annual financial report in any way, first of all. Okay, that is literally the audit of the Fed. What it does is it affects the Comptroller General of the United States. It affects what he can audit. The funny thing about this, probably the best thing about this, is that the Comptroller General can do anything he wants. The way the actual law is written is that the Comptroller General can actually just audit anything he wants at any time. The trick here, and this is a very important point for people to understand, okay, remember that Congress created the Federal Reserve. Okay, that is not, again, You can research that yourself. Congress created the Federal Reserve. Period. End of story. What needs to be said here is that Congress also created the Federal Reserve Act. Okay, Congress amends and changes and has changed the Federal Reserve Act every year since its inception. So what we're talking about here is, the ultimate in deceit. Congress created all of the rules and regulations that does not allow Congress to see or utilize the audit of the Fed. It could, if it wanted to, it could go and get the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report and talk about it, but it never does. What it does is it creates laws, it creates U.S. code that actually limit itself in its deliberations. It limits itself in what it can do with its own budget. In other words, the reason Congress doesn't pay attention to its own comprehensive annual financial report of the federal government, of Congress, all these things, is because it passes its own regulations, rules, and laws that says that it cannot take those into consideration. So really, what it boils down to is Congress passes laws that makes what it does legal, because it's a shell game. When you see Ben Bernanke get up there and tell the Congress that he doesn't have to do anything that they're asking, the reason that he doesn't have to do that is because Congress passed that legislation limiting their own ability to request that information. I don't know if I'm making this clear or not, but this is why.
Why don't you repeat yourself just to make sure that people that everybody got that.
When Ben Bernanke gets up there and taunts Congress, pretends like he has all this power, it's because and refuses Congress in what they're requesting. It's because Congress created the very U.S. code and laws that allows Ben Bernanke to keep that information from Congress. They passed their own laws that limit the information that they can request from the Fed. You understand?
But you wouldn't be able to have the guy asking him the questions with the frowny face if that were the if he actually got the information.
You wouldn't be able to masterfully entertain the population. You wouldn't give the controlled opposition ammunition to say, oh, look, Ben Bernanke just denied Congress what they want. You don't deny Congress unless Congress wants you to deny Congress. They're the boss. It's just not how it works. We also say, well, the president, even though the president appoints and the Senate actually confirms the Federal Reserve Board, or at least seven of them, the president has no power to get rid of the head of the Federal Reserve. Ben Bernanke can't get fired by the president. Well, guess what? That's because that's what Congress created in its laws.
And if Congress wanted to just uncreate that.
Exactly. Congress can do anything it wants, you see. So can the president. Unfortunately, they are actually kind of separate at this point because we're under this state of national emergency, which is, again, a whole other subject. So now we go full circle and we look, what are we talking about when we're talking about the subject of the audit the Fed bill? Okay. We're talking about a piece of U.S. code, and I'm actually it is U.S. code Title 5. No, it isn't. I'm sorry. Oh crap! It's Section 714. It's in the code. It's in the law. I don't have it up in front of me, but we're talking about a piece of U.S. code, one chapter or subsection of U.S. code that was created by Congress in 1978. Here it is right here. Title 31 of U.S. Code, Section 714. Let me just read this to you. In 1978, Congress passed the Federal Banking Agency Audit Act. Title 31, Section 714. It placed the Federal Reserve System back under the auditing authority of the Government Accounting Office. Government Accounting Office, again, is a private association. The Act significantly increased the access of the GAO to the Federal Reserve Banks, the Board, and the Federal Open Market Committee. Since then, the GAO has conducted over 100 financial audits and performance audits of the Federal Reserve. They can do this anytime they want. That's the point. So let me just heads one more time so that you understand this. In 1978, Congress passed the Federal Banking Agency Audit Act, Title 31, Section 714. That section, Section 714,
but Clint,
is the only thing in the audit the Fed bill.
But
the
Clint,
audit
Clint,
the Fed bill.
What you're not understanding is that I believe Ron Paul is Superman or Jesus, one of the two or both.
Jesus with a cape.
Exactly. And, you know, you're just swinging a whole bunch of crap against my superhero, and you can't substantiate your claims.
Well, good luck with that one. I mean, I've been challenging anybody that says, and that is a common, believe it or not, that is the most common response. There are either people who are thinking people that say, oh my God,
Clint, out of me of all people, do you really think I don't believe you on that? I know that's the most common response you get.
I don't know. How stoned are you?
I'm pretty stoned, but I've had a couple of beers, but that's beside the point. That's a red herring. And, you know, it's a bit just my experience that these are the most common reactions from my own research and from presenting yours. So I know that this is what you're dealing with.
Let me just tell you, I thought it was the funniest thing ever. I sent this, I wrote this, I posted it, and then I immediately sent it out to my email list of, I don't know, 200 people. And they usually spread it for me and whatever. That's really the only way I can get stuff out. So the first email that I get back, I cracked up because the first thing I said is, please read the whole article. And if you are going to leave a comment, please leave a comment that proves and verifies, you know, what you're saying. If I'm wrong, please let me know. So the first email I get back, you know what it said? Two words.
You're wrong. Guess me?
Nope. Fuck you. I just cracked up, and I'm like, well, at least it's on the email and not on my blog. So, yeah, that is the response. There's either, like I said, either thinking people who look at this and read this and say, oh, my God. I even had a couple people in the comments, you can read them, that apologized to me. They said, you know, when I read your previous one, I called you an asshole and said that you were, you know, full of crap. But now that I've seen what's happening, now that Ron Paul's son came out and supported Romney, and now that we're seeing the kind of another side of Ron Paul as he's coming to the end of his political career, I'm starting to understand what you're saying now that you wrote this and you've really explained it. I'm sorry that I cussed you out, basically. So I'm actually getting that kind of response as well. But again, I want to make this clear, and I'm going to repeat myself. I'm sorry. In 1978, Congress passed the Federal Banking Agency Audit Act, Title 31, Section 714. Okay, Title 31, Section 714 is the only thing in Ron Paul's bill that is affected by the bill. Nothing else. So what we have is Congress passing a law, a bill, an act, that says, that limits the information that they're going to be able to receive from the Fed.
Right, and Ron Paul's bill said that all the members of the Fed had to agree to any audit in writing, which put further limitations on the previous bill. Instead of opening it up, it restricted it even more. Am I correct?
Yeah, it almost sounds like it restricts. It kind of comes across as restricting the Comptroller General from providing any information, because it takes away the Comptroller General's ability to audit the Fed. And that's what really threw me. I'm like, wait a minute. When you really cut down to the chase and you're reading this thing, the bill actually takes away auditing authority, but you have to really read all of these sections and you have to really understand what's going on here. So I spent all this time putting this into a very long, of course, that is my style. But, you know, I figure you can't really get anything unless you're willing to study. And so that's why I put this together.
I agree with you.
It's unfortunately, you have to go through the whole thing to understand, yeah.
Right. Well, so, you know, you need to read things before you judge them, and I don't know how many times I've repeated that in the last week, you know.
It's true.
It's just, you know, it's always the same thing. People will always attack something that they haven't read, will always have some emotional reaction because you've treaded on their hero or whatever. It's just like that piece I put out on Gordon Wasson, the discoverer of magic mushrooms, on May 13th. All of these attacks, and I ask people to please substantiate your points, etc. Every single one of them couldn't substantiate their points. And when you ask them for the onus of proof, every time they would turn around and say you were attacking them.
You jerk. Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, you really do have to develop, as I'm sure you know, you have to develop a thick skin. And it's very hard. It's very hard. I mean,
it really is. I had to take, you know, this is the first episode I've done in 2 months. I had to take a break, man. I was just beat to death and tired and exhausted. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to really do the show anymore. And I just had to walk away from it for a while. I was kind of having a little midlife crisis, you know.
Well, you know, this is a feeling that is mutual with a lot of people like yourselves, like myself. Once you get into this, once you discover these types of things, not only are you addicted to it, you want to know more, and you know you'll never know everything, but you also have a responsibility. You have a whatever you want to call it, an ethical or moral responsibility to keep doing what you're doing. And that is probably the hardest part, because, you know, I would much rather be I don't know what I'd much rather be. I'd rather go back to my roots and pick up my guitar and exactly. You know,
pick up a joint and play, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to do this, but I feel like I have to, and I don't know where that comes from, and I'm not going
to
get into this.
And that's exactly right. I feel like I have to. I feel like it's my obligation. I see that the elites did this and then blame the people for being dumbed down and then try and kill off the people for then being dumbed down, which the very elites created in the first place. So, you know, and it's like, if it wasn't for seeing the pathetic irony and things like that, I would probably just walk away from it, you know, and people can criticize and judge all they want, but you know, they haven't walked this path. And you know, when you're dealing with 16 years of health problems on top of bullshit family issues and everything on top of all of this, you know, it's just like, man, what the fuck am I doing? Do I really want to help Joe Public out there try and see how they're being fucked? And, you know, so here's another episode.
You know, it kind of makes you wonder if the only viable career in the future is going to be in eugenics or transhumanism, one or the other.
Yeah, with what you and I know, and I hate to say this, but with you and I know, we could certainly be a dirty player, but they don't like us, of course, because we're telling the public how it all works, and nobody else wants to do that. And it blows, like you just mentioned, how this stuff could go undetected for 50 or 60 years, and nobody reads the primary documents, just like nobody bothered to check Gordon Wasson's background, you know, working with the CIA and Council on Foreign Relations, and discovers magic mushrooms, and then publishes it with, you know, with Skull and Bones and all of these people directly related with JP Morgan Bank, and then they don't think that this is any type of psyop. It's just freaking mind-boggling, and it's even more mind-boggling that 55 years went by before anybody, a single freaking person, bothered to check the citations.
Yeah, that's what you know. Welcome to our lives. It's frustrating. I mean, Are you familiar with, I'm sure you are, you're familiar with propaganda, right? Edward Bernays.
Oh, of course. That I've read that piece of shit, yeah. I mean, you know, Wasson and Bernays were close friends.
Of course.
And it was just on a whim. I was just sitting there one day going, you know, here's Wasson. He's at J.P. Morgan. He's vice president of public relations. I mean, there's got to be, it's the same time frame. There's got to be a connection to Bernays. So I started looking around. And sure enough, I found a document written by Bernays himself discussing his relationship with Wasson at the U.S. Library of Congress, of all places.
Ay, ay, ay.
You know what? Let's go into, you know, we haven't even touched on yet this $600 billion expose that you did here on California that kind of, I'm assuming, stemmed out of our investigation into my local school district here last winter.
We know a lot of people. Actually, Walter Buren, he's like, you know, you've done Wisconsin, you've done Minnesota. Why don't you do one of the big states? Why don't you do a Florida or a New York or a California? And I didn't want to because I knew it'd be a dumb. And even what I did was just look at the funds. I didn't look at the whole CAFR because there's a lot more than what I uncovered. But what I did was look at the fund balances. Now, remember, the way government operates is simply on a fund basis. Most of the money goes into the general fund. All the tax revenues that are collected go into the general fund and then get transferred out into, you know, sometimes up to 100 different types of funds. There can be funds for golf courses, for water utilities, for sewer utilities, for anything. It could, I mean, there's so many different things, for schools, for this. Most of those are not reported. Most of those are only reported on the CAFR and not the budget. So when we look at the budget, remember we're talking about your checking account. And when we're looking at the CAFR, we're looking at your checking account plus your savings account plus all your investments. Okay, so that's really the easiest way to explain the difference between the budget report and the CAFR report. So if I have a checking account that I have, say, $10,000 in, and I tell my wife, well, look, we only have a budget of $2,000. Because all of that other money is already designated for other things. I have to pay all kinds of future debt with that money. Don't worry about what I'm going to be earning, you know, in the next year.
I have to pay the house payment from 2020 to 2030 with that money.
Yes, exactly. And so I, you know, our budget, I'm sorry, we don't have any money. I can't buy you that new purse. I can't do that. You know, I spent that on so that's how government works. What it releases to the people is basically a look at its checking account. But it transfers everything out of its checking account into its savings account and into its investment funds. So at the end of the year, look, people, we're short. We need to raise taxes again. We need to increase your property tax, and we need to do all these things because they're not telling everybody about the savings and the investments. Right. So logically, if Jan, if you have a big bill this month, you want to buy something, you're not gonna. You know, the logical choice is not to get a credit card and go into debt. If you have a savings account and investments that you could cash in, instead of paying 24% on a interest rate on a credit card, you're gonna use your. You're going to dip into your savings and you're going to pay for your bills. That would be the logical way of doing things because you never really want to be in debt. The problem with government is that debt is very profitable because government borrows from itself, or it borrows from other governments, or it borrows from pension funds. It's always borrowing from itself. So we have this illusion of debt, but there isn't really debt because it's just one big conglomerate corporation with all 200,000 different, you know, individual subcorporations that are all borrowing amongst themselves. So the promotion of debt is very important because the interest that's paid on that debt is very important, including the interest that's paid on Federal Reserve notes. So what we have in California And again, I just looked at the fund balances. I didn't really go into a full disclosure of everything else. Because you have the joint powers authorities, which is all the insurance schemes, self-insurance, and all that. It would take a massive, massive research to uncover everything in California. But what I did find was $577 billion in investments. 450 of that was in the pension system, okay? Just the state pension funds. And remember, we are talking about the state corporation of California. We are not talking about the cities, the counties, the districts, or anything else. We are only talking about the government of the state, okay, which includes the pension funds. If we were to take all of the cities and counties and districts and everything else in the state of California, we'd be up, Walter Burian estimates, about $8 trillion within the state, which is about $650,000 dollars per person. So we have to understand that this is just the state government. So they came out and they said, well, we have a $16 billion deficit this year in our budget because our checking account is in the red by $16 billion. Okay? That was what they told the people. This was a lie of omission because we're omitting the savings accounts and the investments accounts, which when I looked was $577 billion. So if we take out the pension funds, which we shouldn't, but we will, we're left with about $120 billion in assets. And still they're saying that they have a $16 billion deficit. Okay? I mean, I don't need to go too much further with that. Just so you know, every time you hear your government saying that it is in debt or it has a deficit on its budget report, you need to ask, well, what about your savings account? What about your CAFR? What about the investment funds that you're not telling us about, that you don't include on the budget? So that, fortunately, has been taken by a gentleman named Carl Herman, who posts onto several different websites, including theexaminer.com and another one that I can't think of the name. But he's taken that and he's really rolled with it, and he got interviewed with Alex Jones, and I got my name mentioned. I know I've offered to do I've told a lot of people that I will do Jones' show and I will mind my P's and Q's and I will only focus on the CAFR situation, but I don't think he's going to have me on. I've written too much about Jones, I think, for him to have me on. But I'm just happy it's getting out there. To the public, because again, people are starting to question every time they hear a budget deficit. They're actually starting to question, wait a minute, what about the CAFR? Unfortunately, most people don't know how to really talk about it because it's like the legal language. You know, it's like the law society. You're not supposed to know what these words mean. Restricted, unrestricted, and all that. But we've really, just in the last couple months here, especially with that California article, we have been seeing a dramatic increase in interest. We also had the guy that made Thrive. His name is Foster Gamble,
right,
I believe.
Right.
I haven't seen the movie, actually. I keep meaning to watch it.
I've got it here someplace, and I've been intentionally not watching it for the last 6 or 8 months.
I don't have any faith, unfortunately, because he is the heir to the Procter & Gamble fortune.
Exactly, yeah.
But he did come out, and I was very, very impressed with his little video that he came out, although he, unfortunately, like all of us, he uses the wrong language when referring to the CAFRs, different types of words that really do an injustice to what the CAFR actually is and what it represents. So, but he did come out and he talked about the city of Stockton and had a lawyer, actually, the city attorney actually came out and said, look, the CAFR is late. We need the CAFR before we can proceed with bankruptcy proceedings. And so we have this on film where the actual city attorney is requesting the CAFR and telling us that the city manager is 5 months late in releasing that CAFR. So this was big, as far as I'm concerned, even though the source, it might, you know, be a red herring or a controlled opposition. I'm very happy that that got out there because it increased awareness. And as long as that kind of thing keeps happening, I want to make a public challenge right now to Mr. Foster Gamble. Look, you've stumbled upon, or you already knew about and are pretending to stumble upon, the most important thing, the one thing that will take us out of what we're us into the whole concept of what your movie is promoting. And if you want sincerely to change the world, you, Mr. Gamble, need to, I don't know, fund or hire or do whatever it is. You need to do that for Walter Burian. You need to forget everything else at this point and focus on that man, because that man is the only person out there that I know of that is trying to create a virtual utopia just by using what we already have, by taking the problem that already exists and transforming that problem into a solution. This is the only guy out there that has that. You know, you got Ellen Brown out there talking about state banks. Well, guess what? Central bank is the whatever plank of the Communist Manifesto. I don't agree with that. But Walter literally wants to take the already trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that are hidden from the public and utilize that for the public's benefit, something that is not happening now. That $577 billion is not benefiting the taxpayer in any way. And that's what Walter's trying to do. So, again, I challenge this guy, this Proctor gentleman, to actually put his money, his corporate wealth, where his mouth is and actually support someone like me or someone like Walter. You know, I don't need much. I need food and shelter. Walter needs someone like that man with his clout and his celebrity to promote what Walter is doing. And I got to be honest, I don't think he will. Because guess what? Procter & Gamble puts out a comprehensive annual financial report, and Procter & Gamble is one of the major corporate stock investment held corporations of government. Okay, we can look at the pension funds. We can see who owns Procter & Gamble. So I am hesitant to put any trust in someone unless they're going to put their money where their mouth is, really. So,
indeed. All right, Clint, so what would you like the audience to take away from this fourth interview, the single most important aspect of our discussion today?
You know, I really feel like, you know, you can read about all this stuff on my blog, but what I really would like people to start spreading is the outrage. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone in this because it was just such a humbling experience. But the outrage that I feel, even now, after 3 weeks of knowing about this, the outrage that I feel that I have participated in a fraudulent election to elect a fraudulent president of a corporation called the United States, who is actually the president. He's not even the president of the people. He's the president of the states. He's not our president. He's the president of the territories, the states that are set up as corporations, federal districts. If the state goes away, the state corporation that's on the land of the United States, it just reverts to being a territory of the United States. The state is just a fictional corporation called a government. Okay? What I would like the people to do is to really to go to my blog, read this particular article, which is called Why the Supreme Court Claims Obamacare is Constitutional. And I would like you to focus on towards the Electoral College, because people, we cannot allow our fellow men out there to keep participating in a system and to allow our government and to allow private corporations to keep fooling us and bamboozling us into thinking that we, the people have any say in the election of our president. I want people to know that Russia has a direct election, that the people elect the president. We in America have an indirect election. We, the people, do not elect our president. If there's one thing that needs to be understood in this country, it is that piece of information, especially with the election process coming up. When you look at some of those old videos of people saying, oh, Obama, we elected Obama, we don't have to pay our mortgage anymore. You know, we need to correct these people, the most uneducated among us. We need to put it upon ourselves to educate those people about this, because what we really need is as few people as possible going and participating in the election, because we need to really send a message to Washington, D.C., to this private corporation, that we are on to this game. We are not willing to participate anymore. We are not willing to give you credibility by lending our vote. We don't want to be a part of this system anymore. Yes, you give us benefits. Yes, you force us to pay taxes.
They give us benefits that they that they steal from us.
Yes, you don't own your property. There is no real property ownership. Therefore, there is no freedom. You know, we are in such bad shape. Yes, we get those benefits, but they're benefits at the barrel of a gun, as Larkin Rose likes to say.
You hear that, folks? Russia, the people actually vote for their government. So, you know, maybe it will be a huge herd of reverse migration from here to Russia in the next decade, you know?
Well, but I'm here to tell you.
Russia's in a demographic winter. They're paying people to have babies right now because, you know, most of the countries in the world are way underpopulated, and Russia's one of them. So, yeah, you know, move to Russia.
You know, you don't have to immigrate, because you can immigrate right here in your own country. In fact, one of my future documentaries is going to be me finally walking the walk and giving up my citizenship, which means I'm giving up all my benefits. It's also going to be me going to court and suing to get all my Social Security money back, because I'm finding out that people are actually doing this. It's very hush-hush, gag orders and such, but people are actually getting their money back from investing and being forced to invest under duress to the Social Security system, so the government can then invest that money and create IOUs.
Well,
so
I can't wait to get the insight on that from you.
Well, as soon as I have it, I will let you know. I've got a friend out in Colorado who has done everything I'm talking about, and he is now working on that, and some other people who've actually done it. So I'll let you know. But, you know, you don't need to immigrate to another country. What you need to do is immigrate back to your state. You need to become a natural born man, and man, of course, includes women and men. Man is like a horse. You know, you can have a female and a male horse, but they're still a horse. Women and men are still, you know, ladies and gentlemen are all men.
Right. That's well, you're not allowed to girl rights what? Who we'll cover that issue in depth soon. Thanks, Clint.
Absolutely. But again, you don't you can migrate, or you can immigrate back into America, because right now you live in the United States. You live in the federal jurisdiction of the corporation. You can stay in your state, in your country, and you can be an American again. You can actually be a free man, but you just have to learn how. And again, if you read this article, I think it'll probably all make sense.
Did you have anything else you'd like to add for this interview?
Oh, I don't think so, Jan. I really appreciate coming back, and I really appreciate you coming back from your 2-month hiatus. I think people need you.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a difficult decision, but we'll see. And I'm working on releasing Gnostic Media version 2.0, and I've already got my first interview recorded for that, and I'm looking to move everything to video.
Oh, wonderful.
All right. So, well, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch soon and have you back soon, and keep me posted as soon as you denounce your citizenship.
Absolutely. Thanks again, man.
Thank you, sir. Take care.